This is Floor Radio, and I'm Dave Foster. This is the second part of a three-part conversation about the Federal Reserve. With us for this conversation, Dr. Ken Cyree, professor at the University of Mississippi. He's also on the faculty at the Graduate School of Banking at LSU. And also joining us in this conversation is Mike Barker from Investment and Retirement Management.
Well, Ken, speaking of crude oil prices, and if you also look at the CRB index, which is a measure of commodity prices, it's doing the same type thing.
Yes.
And Dave, it's interesting Ken mentioned that, because he and I talked a couple of weeks ago, and he was pretty convinced they were going to drop 50 basis points, and I was waffling either way. And one of the things he just said that's really important is he's recognizing some things have changed in the last two or three weeks. And in this market, things are changing that dramatically and that quickly. And I asked him just the other day, given what's going on in the CRB index with commodities and of course, crude oil, does that maybe take the chances of a 50 basis point cut off the table? And we both agreed, you know, it's hard to know for sure, of course, but at least it lessens the chances they would do that. And, you know, sticking the neck out, I think they'll lower tomorrow a quarter of a percentage point and then just kind of go from there. Ken, we've talked on the show for years about sometimes it's not what the Fed does as much as it is what they say.
Right.
Do you have any sort of sense of the type statement that they'll put out tomorrow?
Well, my suspicion is, and I'm with you, I do believe now they'll cut 25 basis points. If you look at that CRB index, it was in the range of about 300 a month ago, and now it's at 320, which is a big move.
Yeah.
In a month for an index like that that tracks commodity prices. So inflation is not totally tame, I guess, to use kind of Fed speak here, but I believe what they will do is cut 25 basis points, and they will come out and make a statement saying that they've done this to help support credit markets. They'll probably say that, make some comments about banks and the banking system and the subprime mortgage crisis, or they won't use that word, the problem in subprime mortgages. And I also expect that they will start leaning towards a more neutral statement towards the future. In other words, they'll say, whatever we do today, don't expect any more cuts. But they almost always do that. Even if they cut next meeting, they'll say that. So
right.
The statement that they'll make, if they follow the Greenspan model, will be to make the cut and move to neutral, and say balanced will be the word they'll probably use, that the inflationary effects and the economic effects are balanced, and you know they'll reevaluate later when they meet.
I gotcha. Let me ask you about this credit crisis in the first place. I've heard a lot of people blaming Alan Greenspan, the Fed in general, primarily because they left rates as low as they did for such a long period of time. Do you hold the Fed responsible? Are they responsible?
I don't think they are. Certainly low rates opened up a lot of refinancings, and most people probably did refinance sometime in the last 10 years if they held a mortgage, obviously, that was a higher rate. But largely, in my view, what's happened with this crisis is in most cases it would be the bank or the mortgage lending firm's fault. And by that, what I mean is that they were doing things that are probably not sound business practices. In fact, I'll tell a story. I was in California last fall at a meeting, and we had a guy come in and was talking about the pending crisis, and that was the first I had heard about the building of this crisis. And he showed an advertisement out of a newspaper, and basically what it said was you could get a $500,000 mortgage and pay $450 a month. And I kind of did the math in my head, and I said, well, interest on that thing should be about $2,500. So I went up and talked to him about it, and he said, well, yes, what you're doing is you're loading the back end at about $2,000 a month. So if you borrow $500,000, you're building $2,000 a month. So in a year, you owe $524,000, and in the next year, you'd owe $548,000. So you're not paying down the mortgage at all. In fact, it's growing. And I said, well, what happens if home prices don't go up? And he kind of smiled and said, well, they always go up. So, you know, that's the kind of problem we had, and in particular in California, because what they were doing is using these option arm mortgages to get folks into houses they really couldn't afford, and now, unfortunately, they're paying the price for that.
I wonder if this guy is selling copy machines now or something.
He may be, you know, but It's a real problem, and I feel for the folks that got caught into it, but, you know, it'd be like someone coming to you and saying, here's a brand-new legitimate Rolex watch for $45. Most people would recognize something is amiss and hopefully not make that transaction.
So the lending institutions really were off base and took advantage of a situation, didn't use their heads.
I would agree with that. And it's not every lending institution, of course.
Right.
There were some bad actors, if you want to call them that, that were just running these things through. It was basically like musical chairs, and what they had hoped is that when the music stopped, that they had a chair and that it was someone else that was left standing. And indeed, the music has stopped, and a lot of them are standing now looking and wondering what happened. And that was at least the crux of the beginning of this problem. And then, of course, it widens as markets respond. But
uh-huh.
But I don't think it was low interest rates. I think it was bad lending practices. And also, the subprime mortgage part, too, you know, the reason folks have subprime credit is because they're risky credits. And those tend to default a little bit more than the others. That's why they have lower credit ratings.
Uh-huh. One more thing about Alan Greenspan. He was on 60 Minutes last night, and they asked him that question. And, of course, he reminded everybody that there was lots of other things going on at that point, the stock market bubble, the recession of 2001, the terror attacks for one reason, I think, and all the accounting scandals. I guess that if the Fed had not kept rates as low as they had for such a long period of time, we may be facing a totally different situation as a result of all those things I mentioned.
I would agree with that 100%. I think that we came through that period in very good shape simply because of all the events you mentioned. It was a period where it was almost a triage type effect in an emergency room. You meet the very difficult challenges first, and then unfortunately it probably worsened the crisis we're seeing right now. But people that say those things are somewhat Monday morning quarterbacking,
yeah, yeah.
But it's difficult to know what to do at the time, and I think they made the best call they could have made given the circumstances and the information they had.
Ken, given that, and given that backdrop, that there is a lot of chatter out there now, and has been for a month or so, I guess, from a certain camp of people who are saying that the Federal Reserve should not lower rates right now because of this moral hazard. In other words, they don't want to reward a lot of this behavior that we're talking about by lowering rates and so-called bailing out some of these people. Just kind of touch a little bit, if you could, on is that entering into Bernanke's mindset right now? Is he sitting up there in his office saying to himself, yeah, I know things are bad and we're having all these problems, but, you know, doggone it, these people shouldn't have done this stuff, and we're going to have to show them you can't do this in the future. I mean, and I'm exaggerating a little bit, but comment on that a little bit. Does that enter his thinking?
Certainly that is something that he thinks about. I do believe he will look at the broader economy and not let that influence his decision into keeping rates at the same rate. What I do believe, and what the point you raise is really aimed more towards the decision by Congress whether or not to increase the cap for Fannie Mae and the other GSEs,
yeah,
so that they can go out and prop up folks that got these mortgages that they couldn't afford and now they're about to lose their house. And, you know, that is a very difficult issue. I do feel badly for the people that were pulled into this.
No, absolutely.
At the same time, you know, it's just like I said with the Rolex watch. If you get a $45 Rolex and it's a $3,000 watch, you should kind of think that something is probably not right. And
yeah, something's up.
When the police show up and explain you've got stolen goods, you shouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
But
that's kind of where we are. And that, to me, I don't know what I would do in that case, just to be blunt, because it's very difficult. I am a big believer in the market, you know, taking care of fools, if you will. If you're going to be very foolish, then you deserve to have your money taken away. But at the same time, it's such a widespread problem, and probably a lot of the folks did not really realize what they were getting into. And, you know, everyone can relate to going to a mortgage closing and getting 80 pages of documents, and
yeah,
no one sits
absolutely
there and reads that. You don't really know what's in there. All you know is my payment is blank, and later it could change, but I don't really understand. So I do believe that will weigh on his decision, but I think that's more a function of how we will refinance and some of the other organizations like Fannie Mae and people like that will deal with the refinancings rather than interest rates.
Yeah.
When the Fed meets tomorrow, this is just a question about the mechanics a little bit of the Fed, Ken.
Sure.
If the majority vote for a decrease, say, can Bernanke go ahead and lower rates if he wants to, or if the majority votes for a decrease, can he leave them the same if he wants to?
Well, no. Actually, the FOMC is a majority rule committee. Now, that said, there's very little dissension in that committee. I think over the last 50 years, the average is about 7 or 8% dissension when they have a vote. In the discussion session, it's often a little bit more dissension. I'll say this for the benefit of your listeners. I don't know if they know this or not, but when they meet, what they do is the FOMC is comprised of the Board of Governor members, 7 of those, including the chairman, the New York Fed president, and then 4 other rotating Fed presidents on a rotating basis. So what happens is they all give their opinion about the economy and what should happen with rates. Most of the time, it will be in their own district. For example, if they're in Chicago, they would talk about that market, or Atlanta, they would talk about that. So they do a round robin of talking about what they think. Then the second round, and this is the way Greenspan ran it, and so far I think Bernanke's doing the same thing, is the chairman will give his opinion, and he will say, this is what I think, this is my vote, and here's the reason or reasons why I believe this to be true. And then they will vote. And what has happened historically is that the chairman actually holds sway of really about 50% of the votes. And again, most people don't want to fight the chairman. But clearly, if they did and everyone voted, if say Bernanke was the only one that said hold rates level and there were 11 votes to lower them, they would lower the rate.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. Ken, Dave and I have been talking on the show going back September, October last year, so we're talking about a year ago, about the whole housing issue. And Dave, I'll have to give Ken some snaps on this a little bit, because I've always told you on the show that we have certain people that we talk to throughout the year on various areas of the world we need to keep tabs on, and Ken was one of those going back this period about a year ago when we first started getting little signs that the housing was going to be a problem at some point. And Ken was one of those people, and the California story he described is just one of many things that he and I have talked about during this time about a year ago to give us a sense that at some point this housing thing is going to hit the fan, so to speak, and be a problem. And of course, Ken used to work in the carpet industry years ago, as did I, and of course everyone in Dalton is glued into the carpet industry or the floor covering industry, I should say now, and the effects of what this housing problem will have on floor covering sales, et cetera. So Ken, I'm of the opinion that housing is just not going to get better anytime soon. Now that doesn't mean that I think it necessarily has to go down a whole lot more and become more and more of a crisis. But be that as it may, even if the Fed lowers rates tomorrow, and let's just say they lower rates 2 or 3 more times over the next few months, to me, that doesn't help the pure micro problems in the housing market all that much. Because if a person got one of these option arms or one of these teaser rate mortgages 2 years ago at say 3% or 4%, and then maybe they have a mortgage reset that's coming up of say prime plus 2 or something, you know, if the Fed lowers rates 50 basis points over the next month or two, these people's rates may, instead of resetting at 10%, resets at 9.5%. So big deal. You know, it's not really going to help that much. And generally speaking, do you agree with that line of thinking? Am I missing something? What are your general feelings about that?
Well, I do think it will take a while to play out in the housing market. Now, I'm not an expert in housing demand, so you know, probably someone could speak a little more clearly on that. But you're right in that, particularly the teaser rate and option arm mortgage holders, to go from 3% to 9% or even 8% will be very painful. And there will be a lot of those, not as much in the Southeast. You know, most of those mortgages are in very high dollar markets, some in Florida, a lot in California, a few in Illinois, things like that, but New York. But what you'll see is that that will drive some of the spending habits, and that will affect the flooring industry. I guess if there is any good news at all with respect to the interest rate problem is that the dollar is weak, and for those firms exporting goods, that business should pick up if the dollar continues to weaken if rates lower.
Yeah, we saw that, and I can't remember if you and I talked about this or not, but when Mohawk announced earnings a couple of quarters ago, Dave, you correct me if I'm wrong here, I think it was a couple of quarters ago, where they the numbers were actually better than a lot of people had expected, and the credit for that was given to their foreign exposure.
Exactly, yeah, right. That was both in the first and the second quarter.
Yeah, I think that's right. With Unilin, you know, in
exactly.
Europe. So, and that's exactly what Ken's pointing to.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that may actually improve from that perspective. I expect if rates do get lowered, as I expect that they will, then probably the dollar will get even weaker. So that'll be good for exports. Not so great for imports and inflation. But just as a point, because this often comes up, the exchange rate and the strength of the dollar is at best a third-order condition for the Federal Reserve. They'll not worry much about that, given their concern over inflation and the economy right now. So that's not even very high on the radar at all.
This is going to conclude part two of a three-part conversation about the Federal Reserve. With us, Dr. Ken Cyree. He's a professor at the University of Mississippi. He's also a faculty member at the Graduate School of Banking at LSU. And also with us, Mike Barker from Investment and Retirement Management. We'll air the third and final part of this conversation tomorrow. This is Floor Radio.